alive, let's hit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return of the Mac, the king is back though. Corvette and cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all got the semi-four way. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and try to locate. This for the time, got time for no day.
Welcome to another edition of the Crow Knows Podcast, sponsored by OPW Solutions. I'm your host, AJ Crow. Excited for today's guest. He is an award-winning journalist and one of my favorite NBA writers. Not that I just limit you to being an NBA writer, but that's what I obviously know you best from. Author of several best-selling books, and most recently, A Hollywood Ending, The Dreams and Drama of the LeBron Lakers. Yaron Weitzman, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited.
I want to start off with just current media landscape of the NBA, specifically versus other sports, as I've always been a huge NBA fan, but it seems like it's very different covering the NBA versus the other sports. It seems like the players and most of the writers are always mad and always unhappy about stuff. And I don't know why, but it's just your overall perspective on covering the NBA right now.
So I don't know. Listen, I've written a couple NFL stories, and I've only in my life career, and I've only been in an NFL locker room once or twice. So I'm not. I will say, general sports writers, which I love, are, I would say weird, but I'm not a day to day the same way. Cranky bunch, but reporters are, but I love it. Like I love it. Like I have the first team I was around regularly. I was like, I'll say fall beat writer, like a fake beat writer for the Knicks, for covering the Knicks for Bleacher Report around 2016. Yeah. So like it wasn't the idea, but I was around that team a lot, and I would be in the Knicks media room, wait in a practice facility waiting, and then be me and I don't know, maybe people, I'm gonna name the names. It's Frank Isola, it was Steph Bondi, Frank Isola now, people, whatever. He was at Daily News. Steph Bondi was at, sorry, it was at the Daily News too. I'm losing track. Mark Berman of the Post, as Twitter people will know. Steve Popper, ally in his own, who was at Newsday, now covers the Jet, Mudo, whatever. And I would just be cracking up listening to them. Like they'd all, there was a square and no one's facing each other. Like everyone, you know, it's a room and all the workstations are kind of the outer edges of the wall. And we're all sitting there. And like, I'm the young guy. I know my job is not to participate. It's fine. They welcome me and I learned so much from them. But I would just be listening to them dying every day. Like, I would look forward to going there. Even if I didn't have anything to do, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to go anyway. Because, like, I don't know, the worst place is to sit for 3 hours.
Sure.
And just cracking up. So, Dan, like, and part of it was, like, it's, like, grumpy. I mean, old guys. They're probably, like, 45, some of them at that age, right? They weren't that old. But just grumpy, worn down sports reporters. So I think that's part of it. Listen, the media landscape is crazy now. In general, and it's a everyone's trying to figure out. It's, you know, it's a shrinking pond, and everyone's trying to figure out how to stay afloat. And everyone's got different bosses. Like I was just on a we have this professional basketball writers associations, MBAs. It's not a union, but it's a group, right? Professional group. And we had a call before the season, and I was like, one person who works at a good newspaper, not a New York one, but a prominent writer at a prominent newspaper was kind of complaining, and I got it, like the idea of when he's in locker rooms and asking questions, and then what happens is he'll ask a question, and it's immediately posted a video and taken on short form video and gone out. And he was saying, it's like, nah, we should do something about it, we should make it whatever. And I was thinking, that's not, I understand what he's saying and I understand why it impacts him, but he's in the minority now. Unfortunately, I think the majority of people coming up, like I've given us book sales, we're all at the whims of these short form video algorithms now. And that's sort of where things go. And so like, I think you have some people you have to, I mean, I started doing it, right? Like sometimes you have to just, you need the hits. It's just wild. It's a wild world out there. So to answer your question, I think it's just trying to figure out how to do the job. Everyone's trying to figure out how to execute the job in a journalistic, ethical, lowercase e, efficient, effective way, just like to properly cover the league in a way that then also allows you to get paid, right? And I don't mean that like literally, I mean like to have your newspaper thrive or have your outlet thrive or have things seen. And it just, everyone's trying to figure it out. So that might be my answer there.
Yeah, and that makes sense. You hit something interesting that I had a little bit later that I wanted to talk about, but you even got Adam Silver specifically saying you know, well, you can really just consume our league in highlights, paraphrasing a little bit. But how do you, you know, you come out with this book, obviously everything's gone more short for, you know, short form, everyone's attention spans allegedly are dying. And so how do you come up with, all right, I'm going to allocate my time towards putting together this book that runs kind of counter to how especially the NBA community is consuming content. So talk about that process.
Yeah, maybe I might be an idiot. I don't know. This whole thing is so weird because, so you write, I've been thinking about this a lot this week, right? Because I've had a lot of viral stories in this book, right? And yeah. So you spend, the reason behind doing a book, for the most part, I mean, it's financial, but the reason is you want to go in depth, you want to take an in-depth look at a deep nuanced look at a particular subject. That is the reason you do a book. That's the reason when you pick up a book, that's what you're looking for, right? It's something that will sort of stand the test of time, and not to sound too gaudy, but like you want a book. When I'm writing a book, I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be the record. In 10 years, someone's going to be writing another book or whatever we do then. And they're going to be like looking at this as some sort of like research, right? So, and just as, you know, as a reference point, you're doing that and you do it for 2 years, for me, almost 3 years. And then you spend 2 weeks. The way you sell that nuanced, in-depth look is through pithy viral headlines that strip all nuance from it. and you want to be like the, oh, damn aggregators, but you need them. And like, I'm lying. Like, I want to be aggregated on the book. Like, yeah. You want to, because you want to sell. And not, you want to sell for two reasons. One, you worked really hard. You want people to see your work. And like, you convince yourself, like, yeah, and this is the price. I'm going to get you under the tent. And then once you're under the tent, you read the whole thing. But also, like, I want to make money, right? I want the book to sell. So, and that's how you do it through that. And it's weird trying to wrap your arms around that. Like, it's weird. Like, you have to embrace it. And like, so, you know, sometimes people come, like, I got the NBA Central account, which fans might know. Like, they basically ripped off the whole Russell Westbrook, like their initial tweet that went huge viral. Basically copy and pasted the whole, like, it looked like a ChatGPT summary of the article in a tweet, right? So instead of complaining, what did I do? I put the link to my book in the tweet underneath there, right?
Yeah.
And like, but it worked. I assume those numbers are right. Like, it got a good amount of clicks on that Amazon link. So to answer your question, like, I don't know. Yeah, is it working? Do people read? I have no idea. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little, I thought in the past, some of the stuff was overblown about people don't read anymore and everything. I thought there was like, I didn't think that was completely true or no different than it's always been, right? Like, people always, TV, whatever. The short form video thing, I think, is a change that we are, like, that to me is a legit turning point here that we don't fully know where it's going, but it's taking over, right? You see it, like, Netflix being in, having the Spotify and YouTube, all the data is at YouTube is now, people watch YouTube on their TV more than TV. Like, all the data is there, right? And so I don't know. The answer is I don't know. But it, to me, this is actually a real interesting point. I don't know what the answer is. I might be an idiot or who, I don't know.
Okay. Well, for this specific book, and one thing I've always been interested in when, especially for NBA, just because it's a different, you know, it's covered differently than other sports, but this is going to be, you know, anytime you deal with LeBron, Lakers, and then some of these stories that will come out, it obviously can be a little bit controversial. So how do you weigh, you know, hey, this is something that I'm going to tell these stories honestly. They're probably going to make some people, you know, angry or upset with how it's portrayed, but it's something I want to do versus, you know, what's the long-term effects of these relationships that are, you know, going to be affected in a negative way? How do you juggle those two things when you're deciding to write this book?
Part of it is, you know, I wrote a book as an outsider, which helps me, right? I don't cover the Lakers, and really I'm not in, like, I've spoken to LeBron for, once I joined the conversation at a practice, we were talking about, like, football, and I was there, I probably, like, said four words to him, and I went up to locker room to him once, said, writing this book, blah, blah. Okay, cool. Look, man, so maybe 12 words, right? That's, like, that's the extent of my relationship with LeBron. His PR guy is different, right? I'm assuming they're probably not happy with me. And I guess when you write this, you recognize that, like, it kind of answers your first question. I know, I'm not trying to be, this sounds like I'm playing into the meme. LeBron's not reading this book, right? Maybe page one. But LeBron's not reading this book, right? But he's going to hear about it. How is he going to hear about it? Because I know he probably saw the NBA Central tweet, right? He's going to see that, or he's going to see an Instagram post. Like, this is how this stuff gets processed by the players. Like, go back to the old sports writers, like the day of sports writers walking in, seeing the guys with the newspaper open, reading their column, the full column, that's gone, right? It's social media. So I know they're, and so yeah, I'm aware of that. Part of it is an outsider, right? Like, for sure. So I don't have relationship with the Lakers, and I don't need it. I live in New York, so I don't rely on them to get a credential. I'm not getting a big interview from LeBron. Doesn't mean there aren't people around them who I have relationships with, and some of that I balanced. For me, for the most part, I'm just like, if I think it's valid and I think it's verified, that's the other thing, right? I think it's verified. Mm. And I don't write anything like that. Anything that could be negative or perceived as negative, this will not be blindsight. Like, it's the person's going to hear about it before it's published. Yeah. Whether they respond or not, or whether they want to get on the phone, that's separate, right? But or the representative will hear about it, right? Could I promise that, like, LeBron had my email forwarded to him? No, I can't, right? I don't know. But his representative certainly did. And that's not Rich Paul. It's somebody else. Rich Paul is a whole separate thing. So, for the most part, I do it. And, like, and then if you talk to people, usually I'm a believer that it's funny because the Lakers did not do this, right? Other people did. If the person gets on the phone, usually you can find, like, maybe not always, but usually if I actually have a relationship with you, meaning that we see some common ground somewhere, usually you can, on the points, even if they disagree, they can respect where you're coming from on things and you can explain it. So that's kind of my answer to that.
Yeah. How about, you talked about Frank Gasol earlier, and obviously you have relationships with a lot of guys that have been around for a long time, and you hear stories about the unbelievable access that, you know, guys in journalists used to have back in the 70s, the 80s. But it also seems like you have an incredible access now, just in a different way. Have you talked at all to some of the older guard about, you know, what your process is compared to what their process was to write? And how are those compared and contrast?
I mean, okay, so for a book, it's going to be the same. The way to write a book, and Jeff Perlman is the king of this, and he's like sort of my mentor and taught me this literally one-on-one and just listening to him for years. It's like the process has always been you call everybody. Like it's simple. I'm oversimplifying it, but you find everybody you can and you call everybody. Like that has never changed, right, at all. I think now the everybody, like, you're going to start maybe a little further out and you probably aren't going to get to the source that you would have then, right? Like, again, Jeff's a good example. So Jeff did his he's done a ton of books. But let's say the Lakers. Let's say the 90 Kobe Shaq Lakers. Like, he didn't get Kobe, but he got Shaq, right? Like, he got Shaq. I'd be curious to know what the let's say NBA. Like, what's the last NBA book where the major star participated? And it, like, Miron Fader's Giannis, he did not participate. Marcus Thompson's Durant and Steph Curry books. I believe Durant did not either. Chris Herring wrote the Knicks book, Blood in the Garden. He jokes the four people on the cover, Ewing, Riley, I forget who else, but none of them participated. I can go on and not write. Like, I think, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm missing somebody, but I think for the most part, like, you're finding that books don't have participation from the main subjects. I think that is different, for sure.
It seems like they've all gone towards telling their stories through documentaries that they have,
for sure,
all over,
for sure. And by the way, I respect it. I've always been the reporter. Like, I don't think anybody owes me anything. Like, I really don't. I don't care. Like, it's like I owe you the courtesy of letting you know I'm doing this and the option to talk and share your side. You don't owe me anything. And to be honest, like, we're making money off them. Like, I'm making money off LeBron's name. Like, there's no argument against that. Like, that is 100% what is happening here, right? Like, I can argue, and it's true that, you know, but LeBron's a seminal American, not even just sports figure, but cultural figure and worthy of a depth of all true, all valid. But also, LeBron's really famous, and I'm writing a book on it, and I'm trying to make money off his name. So I get it. Like, he's completely valid on that one.
Yeah. Now, I always appreciate the candor there, because a lot of people make it out to be something different, or they, for some reason, they just don't like talking about it in that context, which is exactly what it is. Everybody's, it's what everyone's trying to do. But so, and you mentioned you're not like a beat writer. I'm always fascinated to hear how journalists decided on their avenue. So you don't have a team affiliation. You know, you're not a beat writer. You take this more broad-based approach. How does that come to be? Is it something you decided that, hey, I want to go down this lane, or is it just, hey, this is where life took me?
it's a mix. So partly it's the jobs I was getting and the jobs I wasn't getting. I just didn't get any beat writer jobs early on, right? And this was easier to fill, kind of coming up in the blog era. So how could you can get these blogging jobs like from your home? Like I would do SB Nation, these desk shifts and things like that, you know, aggregating shifts and things. And then how do you level up? It's you pitch feature stories, right? Or you kind of do in-depth, like that's how you would kind of get on a radar. How do I get Bleacher Report to run something bigger for me? It's pitch a story on Anna Morrison, right? Or like so just like pitching stuff that's off the beat a little bit because they don't need my take on LeBron, right? Like they have that.
Yeah.
So it's partly that. Partly my interest. The other part of this is just true. So I'm an observant Jew. So meaning that every Friday night, every Saturday, I keep Shabbat, Sabbath, and I am signing off and just recognizing that, and as holidays too, and just recognizing that that is probably not, you can do it, but it's probably not conducive to a beat writer job, right? Like for sure. And there was a job I almost took and there was like a thing we had to go back and forth on. We ended up not doing it at a place, which just like, And not in a way, like I always feel bad, like when you get to a point where talking to somebody like that, it's like, I'm not setting you up to sue you for like discrimination. Like this is a legit, it's valid. The concern is valid, right? On their end. So that's part of it as well.
What about, we talked a little bit about the just broad-based landscape. It's strange because in a lot of ways it seemed like it's, not that it's been diluted, but when you have everybody that can essentially become somebody on NBA Twitter just by having an account and maybe they get you pay for the verified stripes, there's no barrier to entry on here. And everyone's got an opinion and it's a really that lends itself to that kind of thing. There's obviously been, there's Sports Illustrated and how that's gone, in a completely different direction. And so at the same time, it's easier than ever to get into sports journalism, but it's also almost harder than ever to have a consistent, credible career. Any opinions on, just this, the current state of being a sports journalist?
No, I mean, it's what you said, right? Anyway, it's easier. Like there are people who are journalists who have like, it's kind of funny. Cause like when they're selling a book, all of a sudden I'm like, no, I want this person to help me. This person, they have a following, even though I may not respect their work in general, right? I guess where I get territorial, seeing it now, like reporting is the basis of all this. And it's funny, and it's too bad. Go back to the short form video. Like all this stuff, honestly, it's all like everything that it all comes out of on the ground reporting. Like all the videos, all like it's all without the reporting, whether it's somebody in the locker room, whether it's somebody with a scoop, whatever, like those are the kernels that then are taken and spun into the world that everyone spins into their own content. So what I get protective and defensive about is like people rip on journalism or reporting or just might say, oh, it's not important. If you remove that layer, all these people would have nothing to, they'd have literally like nothing to build the content on, right? Like all the reaction videos, all we see, whether it's like comedians or it's all based on the initial scoops. And scoops, lowercase s or capital, right? Like it's all that. So I get defensive of that because I feel like that doesn't get recognized enough, right? Yeah. Sometimes literally in terms of I say this in the book, literally in terms of like the hat tip or the attribution, but also in big picture, just being like, no, you guys are all pulling off of stuff. Like this stuff's all building from the foundation here. And you guys, that's where all your stuff is coming from. So I wish there was more of a recognition. And I guess that's where I kind of come and where I feel, where we talk about getting, I think I'm answering your question. If not, let me know. But like where you people get scared of the future or not. Like I'm a believer that there will always be a need and desire for reporting and storytelling. What that looks like, I don't know. Yeah, maybe in 5 years from now, I'm doing a 40 part TikTok video. That's like instead of a book, right? I don't know, right? I'm like only half joking. But like that stuff is still the foundation. So I'm a believer in that. And to answer your question, like, I think that's important for people. Anyway, to break in, God bless. Like if you want to get a following, but I think it's important for people to realize that that's like the foundation. And that's still a necessary skill, no matter where you are. And even if you're not an on-ground reporter, to understand, like, I almost feel like school should be teaching media criticism these days, these days, just because I know it sounds like as a reporter, but the whole, again, the short form video, like that is where that like politics, that's taking over the world. Like that is it. And so media literacy and understanding how reporting works, where stories come, like just understanding all that, I think is going to be really essential to society. It sounds like overblown, but I really do. And I think it's important if you're getting in to be media literate and understand how journalism works. And like, that wasn't a leak. There's a difference between a leak and a report and just all these things and like who's behind what and biases, that just all these things. I think it's essential to believe. I think it's essential to understand.
I think there's also an underlying ethical component to it as well, that when you've had that training and you have more of an appreciation for the process versus just, I think it comes up a lot that the people I've talked to is, and people say that they've had scoops, but they can only get it verified by a couple people or one person, and they couldn't get that second one, versus being in that race where somebody else may not have the same code and they just say, well, somebody told me about it, so I'm going to just take
it. And I'm kind of not understanding the importance of that, right? Like, you see us a lot from, doesn't happen anymore, but like, let's say 5 years ago, there was a lot of like, I'll call it, I'm going to say sports radio guys, which it doesn't, and I'm like, who, and you see, you can think of examples, Scoop, and he got a report, and like, it's like, no, you spoke, you know, one per, maybe, I don't know, maybe the assistant, maybe an assistant coach is a fan of your show and he told you something, right? Like, they're not verifying, they're not working calls. They know one person on the team, they do that, and it becomes not really true. And like, right, the need for that and the difference, and I always try, like, the stuff matters. It really does. You might not realize it, but like, when you put a report out there, there are ripples and domino effects from that that you might not realize. Like, there's a random story I remember. No, one of the first lessons I learned, really random, not even myself, but like somebody else messed up a story about 7 years ago, like another insider or something messed up about like a random scout who was interviewing for an assistant GM job, a reporter or something like that, right? And I knew the scout, and the scout was like, it's not true. And now my team is annoyed at me. Like, they have an issue with me. And like, there are ripple effects. So you might not think about it, but these things matter and stuff. So like, if I agree.
Yeah. And it's funny, and obviously as an NBA fan, especially being a Sixers fan, the trade deadline was the most important thing to us for a long time. And it's interesting how even for teams that I have no affiliation with, you start to figure out, all right, I can ignore everything I read about this team unless this specific guy or girl says something about it, because they're not going to come out with anything unless it is absolutely rock solid. And like, I mean, the Suns have had God knows how much over the last few years, and there would be so many reports and rumors, and then it became, all right, has Gambo said anything about it? If he has, then okay, now I will pay attention to it. But otherwise, you know, for the most part, it just is ridiculous and it gets lapped off. But then I think the flip side of that is people go so far out of their way when something does get reported to pretend, you know, to pretend like it's not true, but then it does become true. And so then everyone basically becomes, you know, conditioned to just assume that everything they see is true. So that's a tough thing to juggle. I want to talk a little bit about the business of writing a book these days. It's, you know, it's obviously not your first. There's been a little bit of time since Tanking for the Top, but still similar eras. But was there anything different about, you know, the underlying economics or the business of writing a book like this versus Tanking for the Top?
I mean, to start, no, the biggest difference is the end, where Tanking for the Top came out at the beginning of the pandemic. So that kind of was a whole mess and change. And then when you go to sell your second book, you have to use that. Like, the sales were not great on the first one. It was fine. There's a misnomer. People, like, everyone was home. And not that. Like, that's not how it worked. Like, the amount of people were home and had nothing to do with such a small slice. First of all, I would say it was March. So the book came out March 17th, 2020. So that's 6 days after the Gobert shutdown. So, like, you got to remember the pandemic was then. It was panic. It was, we're not going to the post office. Many places, like, we're not like going out, so you can't get books to people. You can't,
and no travel, which
no
is
travel
when most people read.
This is before we figured out how to transfer to Zoom. Like, this was the point where no one knew what you were doing. And then, and I'm in this group, but kind of. But the amount, if you had, sorry, the amount of people who were home baking bread and doing nothing, like, yeah, that was a slice. But that was really, either you were older, but you were panicked, or you were younger. Like, if you had kids who were home from school, I can tell you, you had no time.
Yeah.
And if you were middle class or below, you were probably panicking about your job, right? And like, so the amount of people who were home and just leisure reading was really very little. So anyway, sounds like, I guess it's little excuses, but book did fine, whatever. Having to account for that. Other than that, no, honestly, it was pretty, for me, I've been very lucky. I'm blessed. I have an incredible book agent. And the way it works is you like, that's how books are being pitched. I mean, you could do independent and your own thing, but yeah. tougher game to make the money off of. I think the only way to make money on that, if you have like a huge brand and you can kind of go on Substack and basically a version of a Substack it, right? And do that. For me, I need to make, you make your money up front the way it works. You sign a book deal, they give you an advance. Let's say it's $100,000, right? That you, most, if you make more, if your book makes more than that, then you start to earn royalties. I think most books do not earn royalties on that. Michael Lewis, you do, but most do not. Like, even if you get the bestseller list, where that helps you is on the your next advance, right? Like, that's your sales mostly are about trying to help your future income. Yes, I have a great agent. Like, it's kind of like we come up with ideas and he's pretty like, no, great idea. And then I let him take it. And I don't know if he has trouble with it. Like, he doesn't. And I hear like, we have someone interested. That's how it goes for me. So I don't know.
Yeah. Obviously two very different books from, I guess, in target audience might not be the right word, but just thinking the fans of the teams, Tanking from the Top, us Sixers fans, like we wanted the juiciest, craziest stuff possible. Like we were hook, line, and sinker on every story. Like there was no, even the negative or, you know, perceived negative was still going to be a positive just because we lived through it and we wanted to hear about it. Lakers fans, very different situation, you know, very different, a very different time. What is the reaction? Compare and contrast the reactions of the fans of the teams and how they've received the books.
So it's funny. The biggest difference I could find is like, not necessarily the reaction to the book specifically. Okay, so LeBron, I noticed early on, and I knew it. That's part of the reason you do a book like on the topic, but I was also a little naive to it. The difference in just LeBron and the Lakers specifically, it's just next level. And it's not meant as a shot to the Sixers at all.
Yeah.
It's just you learn like these, it's like, I kind of joke. It's like, it's felt like at times going from like an indie project to like writing your studio, your big time studio movie, right?
Right.
And it's more about the Lakers and LeBron than the Sixers. It's just, you see it, the microscope and the fans and like, LeBron's and both are machines where any note about them is going to get aggregated and spun out and feed the machine we're talking about, which is again fine, but just being aware of that, and I think because of that they're more protective of their brands and the narratives around them, and understandably so, I guess. If you are so I'm gonna say LeBron's word, LeBron probably feels so under attack, right, from media, like everyone's trying to glean whatever you can. I even saw yesterday like J.J. Redick at the press conference is talked about like LeBron's media. He gets asked about like talking about the film session, and it's like, what was LeBron like? He was great. He would raise his hand, and that becomes like, that's a thing. And it's like, clearly everyone knows just LeBron, LeBron, LeBron. So you got to protect the narrative. So that part. So that was different. But I think the biggest difference is like, I guess I feel like I was embraced by the Sixers fan base. Like I have not all, but like I have love for them. And I kind of joke, my brother who's come, like I would joke, oh, Sixers fans love me, right? Like I was like, yeah, I loved it. And like, it's right to Ricky with WIP. And like, I just felt like that and like part of a family. And Lakers fans, I feel like I have very little connection to, right? And I don't think it's just because of an East Coast. I don't think it's because of that. It's just a different world. I think things are kept more at a distance, right? And yeah, it was. And I guess also probably like, I'm not the first, I'm late to this party in a way. Like, I'm kind of doing a big picture thing late to the party, Tanking to the Top. Like, I was first. I mean, first, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's plenty of people do garbage rights, like all these things, but like, it was different, or I was part of this initial wave. So that would be the biggest difference to me.
Yeah. How different is it? Right. Tanking at the Top, there was a lot of, you know, either a lot of the main characters, especially, you know, early on from the Hinkie era, either weren't still in the NBA or, you know, there wasn't any, you know, really massive personalities, you know, Brett Brown, a different trajectory versus this book where all the main characters are still very much, you know, obviously involved in the league and in the zeitgeist. Was there any big differences in writing the book or in how it's been, you know, have you been able to take it to market with just how different the presence is of a lot of those guys?
I just think it's, again, they're more famous, more known. So taking the market helps. Like everyone, Rich Paul is known, right? Like Rich Paul is famous in a, like when Vanity Fair is interested in an excerpt, we could send them, they didn't do it, but we send them something about Rich, like an option about Rich Paul, right? Like that's in their wheelhouse, like, or that's something that they would consider, right?
Yeah.
LeBron, Rob Pelinka. Again, we're LA, we're Hollywood. It's just that. It's like the more famous part of it, as opposed to the Sixers thing. Like, those people are not famous. It sounds crazy. Like, the sports famous, and but not like right. So much. Even then, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons when they're younger. Like, again, they're sports famous, but it's a different level. It really is. It just so that's kind of my answer on that. And I don't think I fully appreciated that beforehand. I at the time, and even when I started doing this.
Yeah. What about? I'm always interested in how you figure out what hits the cutting room floor in books and stories that probably are incredible. Is there any hey, this is a great story, but it's about a niche character that might not be, or how do you go about deciding ultimately? Obviously you edit it down and everything, but just from a story perspective, how do you decide, is there too many? Just like walk through that process.
For the most part, that's a good question. I just write at the beginning. If it's a good story, I put it in. And then, but I'm also a believer, like I'm not writing. I think these books are probably almost very similar page numbers, honestly. And it's not like, it's not like purposeful. It's just kind of how I go. Like, I like these books to move narrative. I think that's just what the way sport, like that's what it's today's world. I'm trying to go under 300. I think this one's also under 300. So I'm trying to keep them moving. I mean, part of it is if I can, like, I get asked sometimes, like, what's the best story you left out that you can share? And most of the time it's like, if it was good and I verified it, like, it's in. Yeah. That's kind of the first one. So if it's verified, if I think it's really good and verified, it's in. I'm sure there's some, like, I can remember, was there like a random Jared Dudley story? I don't remember. Like Alex Caruso, right? Some guys like that who are really funny. But even so, like, Rondo's a great example, right? Okay. So Rajon Rondo. Maybe I'll turn him into a sentence instead of a paragraph, some of the anecdotes. But, like, I had a hilarious story about him gambling. I just had a bunch of him. So, like, I made, like, a Rajon Rondo section for, like, 1,000 words, right? Because I thought it was worth it. And, like, I sometimes think that writing a book, one of the biggest skills is if you can accurately render a portrait of somebody in a paragraph. Like, that's a huge thing because it sounds funny. You think a book, you have more space. But you actually don't really, honestly.
Yeah.
You have less often. Unless you want to go 500 pages. But if you're trying to go, like, not, then you have less space than you think. So for me, it's like kind of the main character guys who, who I feel like just, so here, LeBron, Rich Paul, Rob Pelinka, Jeannie Buss, Anthony Davis, like they got, and some of the, they got major coverage. I would say Luke Walton's probably somebody who I think I probably cut a few, like Luke Walton's a hilarious character, especially in his college days. And like, I don't remember if I left him in, but like him and girls in college and just being a ladies man and just hanging out with the Grateful Dead. And he's a great character. And I think some of those, I was like, you know what? Luke Walton is not essential here. Like, we're going to cut some of these.
Yeah. It's I always love hearing about people's process for that. Cause it's, I also always think, I have a very niche interest or sense of humor on a lot of stuff. And how do you, how do you judge what's going to be more broad appeal is always interesting. I got to spend a little time on Tango to the Top. Obviously this is selfish on my part, but, who had the strangest, and I'm asking you to go back for a little bit, but of all the stories, and we obviously become numb to it with how many different ridiculous things that the organization has experienced, but was there anything when you were writing that book that you didn't know that you just said, this is insane? Like, what was the craziest thing that you learned throughout that?
The craziest thing was the level extent, the Okafor stuff, and the level of extent, like when they bring in, I'm trying to remember the exact details, but like how they bring in
Jerry.
You bring him before that, how after like the viral Thanksgiving video, Thanksgiving Eve, him in Boston, and like Josh Harris and them bring in these like security experts to run like these meetings. I forget the exact thing, but like just like the level to which they felt the need to circle the wagons. And I guess the level to which that incident really impacted what we saw happen. Right. So that there's a couple things that, I still am shocked by the way Sam Hinkie ran the team, in that. I mean that like the lack of anyone with a different perspective around him that he could trust. I think that was his cardinal sin. And it's so funny because for the guy who, he's always tweeting these like TED Talk and talking about these TED Talk things where like, I guarantee you he's talked about somewhere in some interview the importance of having different perspectives in the room. Like, that's just something that, you know, he would like love that thought, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, you need to have different perspectives. Yeah. And he did not have that. And again, like, it was interesting to me to see that blind spot and then how that was really his, that weakness took it, was his downfall, right? And it was, and where I think some Sixers fans miss, even if you like Hinkie, like, that's on him. That's not on anyone else. Like, that's his fault. And not the inability to manage up is on him too. Like, that's part of the job, and that's on him. And he failed there, and that's fine, but he failed. Like, it wasn't all just this, his legs were taken out and he's like a victim. Yeah. Like, he is not an, he is not a, like, he would, there were some things on it, but he's not a victim on this. Like, he played a role in his downfall and his,
yeah.
And in the sixth, he played a role in the ownership's need to make a change, right? He contributed.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the one thing I had no idea about, because I always just assumed, you know, he's in the Daryl world, and Daryl's always said, you know, they always have one, you know, one person in the inner circle that's not in the building because they need to prevent, you know, everybody just that group thing taking over. And
yeah, for him, it should have been like a former player, like, just like, you should have had that. You can't have just like the guy, you can't do it. You can't do it. And it's still, I mean, you can't, it's bad management. It's literally, it doesn't mean that you don't need to get a caveman in there who says, I hate Thumpers, but there's plenty of guys who like middle ground, right? Yeah. Like, it just, and it's not even a mistake. It's poor leadership and poor management.
Yeah. That, and it's, for anybody that isn't as intimate in the details, this is an organization that has had, you know, two first overall picks forget how to shoot, one first rounder that, you know, almost died from a sesame allergy, the GM burner accounts that it doesn't even, it's so hard to even keep track of everything at this point, but hopefully they're back on the right track. Opening night turned out pretty well. What was the biggest thing that you learned, I guess, or in the second time around in writing a feature book on an NBA team? Was there anything that sticks out that was, okay, this was funny?
Just knowing how to do it more, right? And like knowing how to ask the questions. I think, I mean, I had a short time. Just knowing, it's funny, when I started Sixers Project, I think I spent my first 3 months like on the wrong things, like almost like more investigative reporting than storytelling, right? So like trying to think who's in charge and who's running, what's ownership structure, like things like that, which is important. But the storytelling part is, like, for a book, you need that. So just, like, more leaning into from the beginning, like, anecdotes and narratives. And then the other stuff comes, and you want to get to that stuff. But just, yeah, I remember I have an image of talking to somebody and, like, being like, who's running the Sixers? Like, one of my first phone calls about them. And just, yeah, it matters, but, like, that's down the line. You want to get stories from in the locker room. Like, what a book is, that's what the Will Smith story was so good, right? Like, I knew that's just sports book story. Like, you want... To me, the ultimate sportsbook story is if it can reveal who the characters are and some kind of tension, and at the same time have a foundation of silliness to it, where it's like, what the hell is going on here? Like that, that's a sportsbook story, and getting more of that was sort of a goal. It's like gambling stories, locker room, things like that. Those were fun. Team playing, things like that.
Well, in your defense, the Sixers at that time were an organization where you did have to ask who was, running the shadow quartet of people that were, we were always confused too. So I don't blame you for that. This has been awesome. We could keep going for hours, picking your brain on stuff. Anything, can you talk about what the next idea is? If there's another one,
I'm not hiding when I say I got nothing, literally. I don't know. I need my next idea to have a scotch and go hide for a week. And
well, fortunately with the NBA, there's always something coming right around the corner. So
Exactly.
Easy. But now, Yaron, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. This has been awesome ever since, you know, the first book and hearing you on the Ricky. This has been a dream of mine to be able to talk to you and talk about the process. So this is
I really appreciate awesome. It. Thank you.
Plug the book. Where can everybody find it?
Yeah, Hollywood Ending. It's available, you know, I joke, it's wherever books are sold. I've been joking. We'd be, you know, supposed to say like indie bookstores, but honestly, I think in the ChatGPT video world, it's like support Amazon. Just read, get the, you know, support that. I don't care. Wherever you get a book, but it's wherever books are sold, you can find it.
It's an awesome book and is truly one of the most fascinating reads, just a different perspective than than just the general Laker LeBron stuff. So thank you so much for your time. Best of luck with the book and sales and everything, and look forward to continuing to read you. Where can everybody read you? Is there anywhere right now that...
I'm all over the place. Man. Check my, whatever social media platform of your choice, you can see my, whatever I'm doing there. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, your own, appreciate it. Thank you so much. Again, this is the Chronos Podcast, sponsored by OPW Solutions. Thank you again, your own, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. This was fun.